The process of no sevens is very practical for evaluating much of what we do. Removing the number seven changes everything. You either have to give the person an eight or a six. An eight is a pretty great score, but a six is barely a passing grade. So, by removing the safety of the seven, the whole dynamic alters. Most of us naturally default to a safe place when faced with difficult questions. Hence, most of us use seven out of a 10 as a crutch.
It's one small step for man.
Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
We choose to go to the moon, not because they are easy, but because they are
hard. I have a dream.
You can't handle the truth.
Seven.
Six.
Five.
Four.
Three.
Two.
One.
Super, 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 super.
Super you. Welcome to today's Super You Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Quammen. A lot of you know me as Equal Man. For those that have been listening along these weeks, you know we always give out my Audible version. We always give out snippets of my Audible version of the number one bestseller, The Focus Project, because it's the best time of year for us to kind of reset and refocus on big things versus busy ones. So it's all about how do we get the most out of life and how do we help others as much as possible. So again, glad you're enjoying these episodes specifically around the Focus Project and how you can focus on big things versus busy ones. So here are some more tips around focus. All right, we're moving into October, chapter 10, which is all about giving. Studies show we feel better when we volunteer to help others. I don't need research to tell me this. Volunteering always fills my cup. Yet, with a hectic schedule, finding time is a challenge. Starting this month, I'm going to stop finding time and start making time for volunteering. I will begin by volunteering every Sunday at our church. Not a huge commitment compared to many of you, but a giant step in the right direction for me. Before I undertook this project, when life got hectic, which frankly was all the time, the first item I stole time from was volunteering. This wasn't right then, and it is not right now. I need to turn wanting to volunteer into I must volunteer. The following stories and modules might seem to be off topic when it comes to being charitable, but a eureka moment for me this month was understanding that the better I was able to focus during non-charitable or non-volunteering activities, the more time I would have to donate to charitable contributions later that same day or week. Many of the studies and stories we cover in this chapter are around how we can be more productive with and protective of our time, which results in a better ability to give our time, treasures, and talents to those that need them. Fill someone's bucket. My 7-year-old daughter's New Year's resolution was to fill someone's bucket each day. The idea stemmed from the book, Have You Filled a Bucket Today? A Guide to Daily Happiness for Kids by Carol McLeod. The theme of the book is that all of us have invisible buckets, and they need to be filled. We can fill other people's buckets through acts of kindness. Conversely, bullying or saying snide remarks about someone might trick us into feeling good in the moment, but such behavior steals from another person's bucket. The joy you steal from that person's bucket can't be placed into your bucket. In fact, bullying, berating, or other negative activities depletes not only the other person's bucket, but your bucket as well. Instead of asking my daughters what they did that day, the response to which every parent knows is, nothing, I began asking, whose bucket did you fill today? Whose day did you make better? Who made you smile today? Asking these questions and expecting their answers helped me begin looking for buckets to fill, and I was grateful when someone filled mine as well. It's also helping me avoid becoming upset about little things, and they're all little. I told the waiter 3 times, no cheese on my kid's hamburger. How hard is it to do your job? Well, it's easier said than done. When I'm feeling upset this month, I'm pausing, breathing, and trying to flip the situation by asking, whose bucket can I fill? Say my name. Knowing people's names is a great way of showing gratitude. Unfortunately, remembering names isn't my strength. To give myself a fighting chance, I put notes in my phone or where I'm most likely to bump into that person. For example, school, restaurant, basketball game, work. That way, when I pick up my dry cleaning, I know it's Kirsten, not Kristen. Another good practice, whenever you're introduced to someone, is to say, it's great to see you versus it's great to meet you, helping you avoid embarrassment in case you have already met them a few times. Say no to the number 7. During the process of editing this book, I used a trick a school superintendent gave me. She said that I should never use the number 7 on a rating scale. I had my family, friends, fans, and team read through this book and rate each section on a scale of 1 to 10. The one twist was they couldn't use the number 7 when assigning their ratings. They could give a section any number, say 3, 5, or 9, but they could never give it a 7. We only wanted the cream of the crop to be included in the book. As such, we made the rule that any section below an 8 would automatically be cut from the book. The process of no 7s is very practical for evaluating much of what we do. Removing the number 7 changes everything. You either have to give the person an 8 or a 6. An 8 is a pretty great score, but a 6 is barely a passing grade. So, by removing the safety of the 7, the whole dynamic alters. Most of us naturally default to a safe place when faced with difficult questions. Hence, most of us use 7 out of a 10 as a crutch. No 7s removes the crutch. This method was particularly useful in checking in with my family or members of my team. How often do you find yourself asking someone how they're doing? Often they robotically answer good or great. Many of us will even say we are great when we're actually down in the dumps. It's similar to the answer that we give a waiter who asks us how our meal is. Unless the food is toxic, we usually just chirp, good, even when it's utter garbage. In working with teams throughout my career, I find it strange that companies only have annual employee reviews. This is insanity, stemming from the belief that it's imperative to check in with teammates on a daily, not annual basis. I started the practice of asking my teammates and family members, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are you doing? With these check-ins, I started to give 2 parameters. Remember that focusing the question will help focus the response. The 2 guiding lights. Number 1, you can't say 7. And number 2, you can't say 10. Nobody is perfect. 9.99 is an acceptable answer. 10 is not. Now here's the key to properly doing this. Most people will make a common mistake, which is exactly what I did at first, and I want to help you avoid this mistake. Let's take a look. I'd ask my teammates how they were on a scale of 1 to 10 with work, and that's it. In theory, it makes sense. We are at work, so let's talk about work. Especially if I'm the team lead. I need to be careful not to get too personal or make anyone feel uncomfortable. However, the key I discovered is to ask our teammates how they're doing in totality. Family, health, work, spiritually, and beyond. Asking this broader question is not only being a good human being, but it also provides context. Here's the initial conversation before I learned to ask about life. Me, I'd ask Sarah, how are you on a scale of 1 to 10? And she'd probably answer, I'd say probably an 8 or a 9. Woohoo, she's one happy teammate. Then the next day or week, I'd ask her the same question. Sarah, how are you on a scale of 1 to 10? I'm around a 3. Holy smokes, sound the alarms. What did we do this week to upset Sarah? If she's a 3, she might be leaving the company. She's so valuable to our team and we love her positive attitude. What have we been doing to make her feel so bad? I start freaking out in my head with various doomsday scenarios because, wait for it, I have no context. I have no idea if Sarah's dog is sick, if she has recently lost money in the stock market, if her parents have decided to divorce, or if she's going through a bad breakup with her partner. I have no context. To help get context, I now ask for a 1 to 10 rating for life and then for work. Sarah, on a scale of 1 to 10, how are all things with your life? I'm around a 3. What about work, the team? An 8. Now I have context. Now I understand that work is a positive influence in her life. If Sarah feels comfortable, we can chat about what's troubling her and if I can help her. Work-life harmony is imperative. If Sarah isn't her best self at work, she's not going to be her best self at home, and vice versa. both impact the other. Some might think it's crazy for companies to have work events that invite the employee's entire family. Personally, I think it makes all the sense in the world. Why not include the entire circle of people playing a role? It also dawned on me that being charitable isn't simply just donating money or time to the local soup kitchen, but it's also about being charitable with your loved ones and those at work, taking time to show that you genuinely care. Remember that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. The Ben Franklin effect. Asking for favors makes people like you more. It's normal to feel anxious or uncomfortable when asking others for favors. Human nature makes us apprehensive of burdening others with our problems. We fear that asking others for help may cause them to dislike us. Benjamin Franklin didn't think this way. He practiced the exact opposite. At one point in Franklin's political career, he was tasked with winning over another statesman, a statesman who adamantly opposed Franklin's policies. This particular politician owned a very rare copy of a book. Franklin, who loved to read, wrote the politician a letter asking to borrow the book. The man said, yes, and within a few days of reading, Franklin kindly returned the book with a note thanking him. After this exchange, the politician was noticeably kinder and more accommodating to Franklin. The two men eventually became lifelong friends. Franklin strongly believed that asking someone for a favor made people like him more. But is this really true? Can asking someone for something actually make a person like us more? In 1969, almost two centuries after Franklin, two psychologists, John Jecker and David Landy, set out to test this theory. They separated participants into three groups. A secretary told one group of the participants that the psychology department had paid for the study and that the funds were almost gone, and asked if they could please return the money. The experimenter told the second group of participants that he had personally paid for the study and that funds were running low, then asked if he could have the money back. The third group was given their money to keep. The study found that volunteers who were approached by the experimenter himself to return the money preferred the experimenter the most. Those who were allowed to keep the money liked the experimenter the least. This shows that Franklin's theory holds some truth. People like you more when you personally ask them for a favor. Psychologist Yu Niya of Husei University in Tokyo conducted a similar study in the U.S. and Japan. The study found that participants liked other participants better when they asked for help. Yet, they didn't like a participant more when asked by the experimenter to help that participant. In other words, when a middleman was asking for the favor on behalf of someone else. Most people enjoy being charitable and prefer that the person needing the favor asks them directly, rather than asking someone else on his or her behalf. While we are all about being charitable this month, part of giving is actually asking. By asking for help, you're allowing that person to give some of herself, to be charitable, to experience all the positive feelings that come along with it. Also, when someone else proactively asks to help you, don't deny them the opportunity of doing you the favor. It actually makes them feel better about themselves, and they accomplish something for you. So it's a win-win. This is often difficult for many of us to embrace. We're often stubborn and simply say, I got it, or we don't accept the helping hand. We don't want to burden others. Flip your mindset and understand that when you allow someone to do you a favor, you're helping make that person feel good too. So do yourself a favor this month. Allow someone to help you. Ask for a favor and give the concept of No 7 a try. This show is produced by Jake Brin, Maritza Gutierrez, and Kelsey Gomez, and it's made possible by you, our listeners. So thank you so much for tuning in each and every week. Obviously, we have these shows that we do at the beginning of the year. It's the third year we've done it, to where we give you tips and clips from the number one bestseller, The Focus Project. But obviously, we have our regular show. Those are me sitting down with guests. That might be me talking about some late topic that we get a question on, whether that's artificial intelligence, or it could be I get interviewed on another show, or some of our more popular episodes are when we have seven super tips, or we sit down with guests that we interview, or get tips from Elon Musk, from Jeff Bezos, from Miley Cyrus, on down the line. So again, tune in each and every week to the Super You podcast. We're trying to do more than one show a week, so let us know how that's going. But until next time, this is your host, Eric Qualman, a lot of you know me as Equal Man, reminding all of us it's not what we take from the world, it's what we leave behind.
7 6 5 4 3 2 1
Super, super, super,
super you.